With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Wednesday morning. Well, it feels like everything's back to normal because on Wednesday mornings we have our Legal Hub. And guess what? It's time for Legal Hub. So that means everything in the world is okay at this moment anyway. Katie Ashby Coppins is joining me for our comeback reboot Legal Hub show for this Wednesday morning. Hi, Katie. Great to talk again.
Ah, oh, so good to be back. Thank you so much, Paul, for having me this morning. And thank you to all the listeners. My heart is filled with hope. It really is. It's so awesome to be back.
We'll get into talking about legal issues in just a moment, but I'd like to ask everybody, especially RCR folk who have been coming on the program yesterday, today, and we'll have some more as well as we go through this week. What do you make of what we've just been through?
Yeah, wow. Goodness gracious. There's so much to make of it. Like, how do you begin to unpack it? Having been with the Voices for Freedom Girls and the RCR team for as long as I have, I know the stress that you go through to make sure that there is, you know, we can go another month. To have everything happen in the way that it did with the timing of everything, it's almost, I feel, serendipitous. You had News Hub going the day before and mainstream media really, you know, having a sharp eye put on it with, you know, questionable allegiances, if I could say that, and, you know, really failing to do their job as the Fourth Estate. And then, you know, Reality Check Radio's offline, you know, that was a really serious blackout, and you know, and the people have spoken, and they want to see us on air.
Yeah,
you know, it's just awesome, and I've said it before. You know, we used to pay 50 cents for the Herald every day, and that's when we got the news we wanted. When you stopped paying for the news, the advertisers and the people behind the news organisations started paying for the news. So, you know, you can see that definite behavioural shift, which is, you know, whoever's, you know, paying you is possibly what your messaging is going to be directed to. And so this just enforces and encourages us to keep doing what we're doing, which is good, honest media that the people pay for, that the people want to hear. And, you know, both sides of the story, you're not always going to hear what you like. And it's just awesome. I'm so happy. How are you, Paul?
Well, it kind of restores my faith in, well, I won't say humankind because that's really big, but in New Zealand kind, or a section of it, to get a response like that. You can't do that without people really wanting it, and you don't get that without doing it right, is what I think anyway. And I mean, we can't be perfect, but that's a very good point you made about who pays, because who pays calls the shots really in the end. And I think what we've demonstrated to the media itself, but also, you know, wider than that, is that now, if you want to be sustainable, if you want to be successful, and if you want to grow it, all those things, and you understand that the previous model is not fit for the way things are now, that you have to have that authenticity, that credibility, that reliability, and people have got to really genuinely want what you do. Mm. And that's a high bar. That's a high bar. That's hard to reach. It really is. And I know a lot of the folk out there in this industry, and I know they'll never get there. They don't even know how. So I think we're in an incredibly good position. I don't want to use any cliches like green fields or smooth sailing, because it won't be. But everyone knows that we're here now and we're secure. What about everyone else?
Yeah, look, and I can't even imagine, you know, once that Public Interest Journalist Fund dried up and you've got a new government that doesn't pave the line in the pockets, you know, it's a very different different scenario. You know, and then on top of that, you had that significant amount of advertising that was done over the last 4 years. I think it was 156 million. You know, there's money definitely talks, but also how short-sighted.
Well, it's like being a drug addict, isn't it, in a way? That's what I think. You're getting your free drugs and it's all good. What happens when you're addicted, and what happens when the supply's cut off? What do you do?
Goodness gracious, what an analogy.
Probably says more about me than anything.
But, no, but I'm just thinking.
But it was like that, wasn't it? It was like,
yeah,
easy money. All you had to do was play the game, and it went for a long time. Everything was being paid full retail, so it's the best deals you've ever made on advertising. And then it starts to thin out. Then it goes. You've made no provision for how you're going to carry on after that. Very short-sighted. I guess a lot of these execs figure they'll be out of these positions by then, so it won't matter anyway. But when the goodies are taken away, what happens?
Yeah, absolutely. What happens when the goodies are taken away?
Anyway, let's get on to legal matters. It's been a month since we've talked. I'm curious, where are we at on the topics that have occupied quite a bit of our chatting over the time? Pandemic treaty, international health regulations. Where are we at? Bring us up to date, if you don't mind.
Well, where we're up to is we're still in a state of flux. We don't have the final versions of the documents yet. We're going to be asked to vote on them in about 2 weeks' time.
We're going to be asked to vote on them, but we don't have them.
Yeah.
Oh.
I always love to agree to a contract that I haven't seen. So look, it is a really interesting situation to be in. We've got neither document is finalised. We finally got or received publicly available versions in April for both the pandemic treaty and the substantial amendments to the international health regulations. They are really, for the pandemic treaty, that was a further update on the last version that we received in October. So, and various portions in February. So, you know, that was a complete set again. So we've always been receiving new and updated versions of the pandemic treaty. But the amendments to the international health regulations, this is the first time we've seen a actual published version since February 2023. And there's been a lot that has happened in that time with the review committee and I think about 8 meetings. But look, the April 2024 versions of both documents were still being discussed last week and this week. And then we go to all countries, all member states go to the 77th World Health Assembly in Geneva starting the 27th of May, and they're going to be asked to vote on these documents.
But how can they?
How can they? These documents, certainly the International Health Regulation amendments, were due to be delivered to us in January 2024, so 4 months ago, so we had time to consider them. The legal advice from their lawyer, Mr. Solomon, gave this absolutely nonsense description saying, oh, well, don't worry, you published those ones back in February 2023. You don't need to worry about publishing or meeting that timeframe, even though the decision that brought about those amendments required them to provide the amendments 4 months in advance. And that's just simply because that is just equitable and fair. There is no way any country is going to be able to review these to understand them before voting on them.
Including our country.
Oh, absolutely, including our country. And there is an inference that if you have voted in a positive manner, that you will comply with the treaty or the concepts of the treaty while you go through the processes of considering it, rejecting it, ratifying it, and implementing it.
Now, what about the amendments you're talking about? Has there been any rewriting, any recalibration, repitching of documents or material from before that? I guess what I'm going is, are they perceiving that there's pushback and they're kind of sort of tinkering with messaging and words to try and sort of worm around particular problems, are they?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just take the pandemic treaty. One of the versions of one of the articles mentioned gain of function in February 2024, regulating gain of function. That's conveniently been removed from this latest April version. I imagine it was probably a bit of a red rag to a bull in a lot of respects.
Well, by just mentioning it.
Oh, that the WHO was going to regulate gain of function research.
Which implies that there's a level of tolerance of doing that. It's just...
Absolutely. And no doubt it will be done at
the... Got us into this mess in the first place, it seems.
Correct. And look, no doubt it will be part of the WHO's laboratories that they're going to be running, where every country and member state is still required to scour their countries for pathogens of pandemic potential and send them off to the WHO's scientific laboratories for them to be stored, studied, and no doubt cures found.
Oh, cures. Yeah, right. So do we, here's a big question, and maybe we don't know, can we trust our government, do you think, in this?
Look, we had the last version of the amendments to the international health regulations rejected on the basis that a national interest assessment needs to be conducted. I think if our governments are going to, or government is going to do the right thing now, the most appropriate thing to do in the circumstances is to insist that voting is postponed for at least 4 months for us and, you know, those little nations that might not be able to consider and understand or review or get to the bottom of all of the implications that these documents create on a country. Postponement has to be really the only option, and they need to insist on the postponement, because you would never approve or adopt a contract you've not seen, and this is the situation we're in.
So is it wise to try and do it in through voting, or at some point you just, depending on how it goes, you'd have to say no, go stick it where the sun don't shine?
Yeah, look, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. I think there's a lot of countries that are concerned at which, at the speed at which this has been attempted and being undertaken. A lot of countries are going, well, you know, what's with the urgency? Naturally occurring pandemics, there's actually a low risk of them occurring. So why are we doing this at breakneck speed? What really is the reason? So let's just slow this down a little bit.
Do they talk about mRNA much in these amendments when they're defining these vaccines?
Not specifically. They talk about vaccines. They talk about health emergency products or health products. So not specifically mRNA vaccines. But when you see the number of mRNA facilities that are being built all around the world, you can be pretty confident that that's where the direction of a lot of this is going to go.
But surely on the basis that it alters genetics at the cellular level, Guy Hatchard's told us all about that, that's an automatic, in the strongest possible terms, a rejection, isn't it? Even if it is walking away and not even voting.
Yeah, look, we've been doing a lot of work in that area for a very long time. You know, my court case here in Australia has always been since when we lodged in July last year that these products are GMOs and they need to be taken off the market. It's a really tough gig to try and get anyone to pay attention to that.
Why?
Well, because there's just this absolute willful blindness. You know, that I don't want to see this information.
Well, it's a trillion. Guy Hatchard mentioned, we talked to him yesterday, it's a $1 trillion business.
Correct.
So that's a lot of, you put dollar notes end on end for $1 trillion and probably get to Saturn.
Yeah, correct.
So, you know, who's going to follow the money?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, this is where the WHO is relevant, because, again, it's another organisation. Follow the money. You're getting huge amounts of money. I think it's at least 85% coming from private, public contributions, voluntary ones. That's usually a payment through a business via a government organisation as a gift to the WHO. And guess what? It comes with strings, a lot of strings. Preferably use my string for the next pandemic.
Do we know if these national risk assessments have been done?
No, they haven't.
You mean they haven't been done, or we don't know?
No, they haven't been done.
What?
Because how do you do a national risk assessment on a document that's not even finalised?
Well, you can do a national risk assessment that says if we haven't finalised the document and we're 2 weeks away, then that's too risky.
Yeah. And look, that's exactly where what the advice needs to be. If the cabinet are not advising whoever the people are that are tootling over to Geneva on New Zealand's behalf to insist that this be postponed, this voting on these agreements, sorry, treaties is postponed, then, you know, our cabinet is inappropriately advising or granting the wrong type of permission. There is only one answer here. It is postponement. And if they won't postpone, it is to reject.
Yeah. Winston Peters is the foreign minister. Mm. He knows how he got across the line. I'm sure he knows. He must know intricately at a very high level of detail in his job, surely, where this is at right now. Would that be fair to assume, you think?
Look, I wouldn't assume anything, and I'm always often very surprised about how much politicians don't know. I certainly, material that I've produced has been passed to his department outlining where we're at with these pandemic treaties, certainly saying that, you know, this is the only option, you really have to postpone or vote no. So, you know, as a citizen of New Zealand, that's what I'm doing to make sure that he's aware of it. As to what his advisors are telling him or the public servants within the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, I don't know.
No, I didn't expect you to know, but I just thought, you know, I would assume that there would be some kind of being across it.
Look, I really hope so. I really would. I really would. It's all going to come down to his briefing, how much has he had a chance to read.
But his colleagues, they're aware too. I've spoken to them personally and in interviews. They know.
Good. Good.
Yeah. Okay. So what would happen, do you think, if we rejected it and it was sort of taken up by a whole bunch of other countries? Does that mean that we're like ostracized, potentially frosted out? And is that the downside of trying to sell it to average Kiwi?
Yeah, correct.
Because no one wants their Fiji or LA or Disneyland or whatever holiday interfered with.
Mm.
The fear of, and is it interesting? I know I'm sort of skipping over the place here, but isn't it interesting that there's talk now of H5N1 flu, bird flu, now jumping across? I think there's been some sort of tuberculosis outbreak in California, and there are other things bubbling away. Measles is being talked about here, but I think it's probably not only here. Do you think there's some interesting synchronicity of timing going on?
Oh, look, fear is very effective, and perhaps that is, the timing is relevant. Who knows? Who knows?
What is the legal recourse if we decide to accept them, Is there, I mean, I'm sure you've thought about this, is there any way of fighting back even after that?
Yeah, look, so some time frames start running. We've got the opportunity to reject, and as New Zealand rejected the Article 59 amendments, we've got 18 months to reject any of the international health regulations that may be voted on in May of this year. The pandemic treaty is a slightly different beast, but yeah, look, there were still things to do afterwards, but the problem is if you have positively voted for both of these documents, there is an inference you're going to apply them and implement them, and you are going to behave in accordance with them until you've made a decision otherwise. So we don't have a chance to review them. How can we vote? That really is the case of, and what's the damn urgency?
So if we did vote for them, there's something not quite right then, right? There's something going on.
Yeah.
Because it's not sensible, logical, even safe.
Of course. And look, these treaties are law at an international level. They're not law at our domestic level. So their implication is that they don't have an application within New Zealand until we've altered our laws in accordance with them. But there's very strong wording in all of the documents that we have to. There's a new board, a new group of people that need to be established in New Zealand to ensure that we comply with the international health regulations. And, you know, if we're not, we need to explain ourselves. But then there's also, you know, the huge geopolitical consequences if we don't. And they are real ramifications that we will feel and see if we, you know, don't toe the line. So there's a lot of moving parts. It's very convoluted by design. You've got two separate documents purporting to be pandemic treaties that's supposed to talk together. We've got no time to consider it, whether or not this is good for us, for New Zealand.
So we're being rushed. Everyone's being rushed into it, right? It's so no one can catch a breath, kind of.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's being done at a great rate. It's being done without forethought. They've been working on them since May 2022. And they have been going great guns. And they have had multiple meetings. The working group for the international health regulations, the international bureau for the pandemic treaty. And in the 2 years that they've been actively working on these, they've not been able to get the documents finalized. So, you know, how the hell can we get in to consider the implications, ramifications, and whether or not we actually want to vote yes on them in May 2024?
Are there any other countries that have a firm position, rejection position, that we know of at the moment? Who's lining up? I know we've mentioned some in the past. I'm trying to think. I think Iran was in there, and
Poland,
maybe a South
Estonia.
American country or two. But
yeah, I think Poland and Estonia have made noises. The Netherlands House of Representatives has said that these need to be voting needs to be postponed.
Yeah.
It was only just last week that, in a quite uncommon display of unity, all Republican senators signed a letter to President Joe Biden, in which they conclude, and I'll quote this because I think it's important, "In light of the high stakes for our country and our constitutional duty, we call upon you to withdraw your administration's support for the current IHR amendments and pandemic treaty negotiations, and shift your administration's focus to comprehensive WHO reforms that addresses its persistent failures without expanding its authority. And three, should you ignore these calls, submit any pandemic-related agreement to the Senate for its advice and consent."
Boy,
so
that's
pretty in the guts, isn't it?
I'd like to hear that here, kind of something similar here.
Yeah, look, and that definitely needs to happen. We did see a revision of the cabinet paper and positioning. We saw huge response to the international health regulation submissions and pandemic treaty given to New Zealand by all of us to the government by all of us. So good on us. That's really sort of helped them listen, I think, a little bit better. But, you know, it's very much a state of flux. And, you know, the only option is postpone, if not reject.
All right. In a few minutes we've got left, just a couple of points. Article 59, remind us what that is again, please, if you don't mind.
Ah, yeah, remember all of that effort that we did last year with getting everyone to reject the Article 59 amendments because they reduced the time to consider the future amendments and also implement them by half. No, in the April version of the International Health Regulations, all of those timeframes that we had rejected because they were too short have actually been reverted to the old timeframe. So all countries have 18 months to consider before rejecting any of the IHR amendments, and then 24 months to implement. So those timeframes have come in, but we all had to go through that palaver of last December, making sure that we got those rejected in time. So I do believe New Zealand's position on that with a formal rejection and the other four countries that did so is a very clear indication that they needed to be much fairer in the timeframes. And I think people would just say, look, what is the rush? What is the rush?
Well, I think we know what the rush is.
We do, we do. But look, there is, I'm super excited. I've managed to negotiate and have a chat. And David Bell, former WHO scientist, and Ramesh Thakur, former UN General Secretary, is going to be in New Zealand in next week for an event, I believe is Friday night, that Reality Check Radio is supporting. That's going to be a very important event because people will be able to hear from people that have actually worked or experts that have actually worked within the organisation. So it is pretty damn exciting that we'll be able to have them expounding and sharing their views and concerns, because it's all well and good me sitting here and telling you it as someone that's studied law, but to actually hear from the guys' mouths, I think is going to be so invaluable. So yeah, make sure you check that out.
Yeah, we'll have details about that, obviously, not too far away here on RCR between now and then. And also a ceremonial moment opportunity tomorrow at Parliament, I hear.
Oh, yes. Very excited to know that the full terms of reference that were drafted are being handed to, I think, New Zealand First. Was it going to be Winston Peters?
I believe it is Winston Peters, I believe.
Oh, well, that's pretty damn exciting. So I'm sure everyone remembers that big push that we did back in February to the beginning of March, where we drafted a full set of terms of reference, which we called the People's Terms. That was in response to the request by the current Royal Commission to consider expanding the terms of reference for its limited labour inquiry. And look, we got 33,000 signatures on that. That's no small feat and nothing to be sneezed at.
No way. There is a
significant number of terms that will cover every aspect of the public health response to the pandemic treaty. And the girls, I think, will be handing it to Winston tomorrow on the steps of Parliament. And that's just,
woo-hoo.
That's just awesome. That's just awesome. Now we actually need to see some action from the government to insist that the steps that are necessary are undertaken. That's new Royal Commission, full terms, responding to all to obtain answers to all of the questions that need to be answered.
Great to chat again, Katie. It's great that we're back. Good to have you back on. Thanks for everything you do.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Paul. I'm so glad to be back here with you and everybody else this morning. I know that sometimes it can be a bit dry and boring, the old legal radio station
never boring.
Show.
It's one of the most popular things.
Well, look, I love being back. I love having the opportunity to share what we've been doing and what we're up to. And, you know, thank you just so much for the opportunity. I'm so grateful.
We'll talk again soon on maybe the next Legal Hub. Thank you, Katie Ashby-Coppins. Great to have you back. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Paul. See you. Have a lovely morning.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.